You're listening to The Public Eye right here on 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this Sunday evening. By now, I think most of you know that I'm pretty much a big history buff. But even a new book came across my desk last week that even I was not aware of the amazing content of this particular book, Educated for Freedom. The author this week is my guest, Anna Mae Duane. She's the Associate Professor of English at the University of Connecticut. What Anna Mae was able to uncover are two civil rights activists who have never gotten much in the way, if any at all, in the way of recognition. I mean, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Nat Turner, people of that nature have certainly been part and parcel of American history, especially in terms of civil rights for many, many, many years. But the two gentlemen, James McCune Smith and Henry Highland Garnett, as I said, the names were just brand new to me as well. And Anna Mae has done an amazing job of researching for the book and bringing to light these two gentlemen who played a very important role in civil rights activism here in this country. Anna Mae, nice to have you with us.
Hi, good evening, Al. Thanks for having me.
You know, I mean, I think Professor of English. Okay, so you know, this is actually maybe English / history. So I'm going to assume that you're part history buff.
Absolutely, absolutely. I found threads of these two men in the archives, and I was thinking about children's literature, and I just couldn't look back. I just needed to find out who they were and what happened to them.
You know, these guys lived 1813, 1850. Both of them were born in around that period. So, I mean, you know, they obviously got lost in the shuffle. But at that time, how big of an impact did they have on African Americans in this country?
Their impact was actually quite huge. They were well known in the community. Henry Highland Garnett, one of the subjects of my book, was actually considered the finest orator in the African-American community, bigger than Frederick. He and Frederick Douglass, who your listeners are probably more familiar with, had a lifelong rivalry. And when the 13th Amendment was Lincoln sent it up to be ratified, they needed a speech, and they asked for Henry Highland Garnett to give it, rather than Frederick Douglass. So he was, known by both the white and black community as a powerful force and sort of a political activist. And James McCune Smith as well was the first African-American to earn an MD, and he was quite well known at the time. They both just sort of faded from the history books, which I'm trying to address.
Yeah, and it sounds, well, obviously an MD, so both were highly educated, right?
Yes, and their lives were in many ways struggling with what that education should be. And for James McCune Smith, he was a star student. So I should say I met both of these incredible men as schoolboys. I first came upon this story searching school records in New York City. And I didn't realize at the time that I found the school so fascinating that the school generated a whole cohort of really famous, influential students. In addition to the two that I research, we also have school principals and artists and just this incredibly successful group of alumni. So it was kind of hard to narrow it down just to these two men. But so for education, whatever happened at the school really set many African-Americans on a path of accomplishment and activism.
I was amazed, and I want to get your sense on this. These both gentlemen, James McCune Smith and Henry Highland Garnett, born pre-Civil War, yet they were able to attain a level of, as you said, highly educated, a high level of education. I was surprised by that. I thought, especially pre-Civil War, that very few, if any at all, African-Americans even had that opportunity. How did that come about?
Right. I mean, it's, and, you know, when you say that they've been obscure and you weren't aware of them, most people aren't. I wasn't until I started researching this. I think partially it's because they tell a story that we're not as familiar with. We know Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and sort of the slave narrative of sort of escaping slavery, but we don't know this other story of free black people in the North who were educated and were imagining freedom in other ways, or, you know, were sort of thinking of, like, what the future would look like as citizens. But the school that they attended is sort of this remarkable place. It starts, so they attended in the 1820s, but the school was founded by founding fathers. Alexander Hamilton had a hand in the school, mm-hmm. John Jay, other sort of New York politicians and elites. In 1787, so as the Constitution is being worked out in their spare time, right, the founding fathers were busy guys, Hamilton and these other New Yorkers set up this school for the children of, in their mind, they were thinking of the children of slaves at that point. And they were doing so because they envisioned a time without slavery. They were anti-slavery. It was part of an anti-slavery society, and they were concerned about what the future would look like. They said, well, we need to get ready. We need to get the next generation ready so that when freedom comes, they'll be able to grasp the responsibilities of citizenship and jump right in.
Yeah.
So that's how the school started. And it goes on for 50 years. And, you know, well before the Civil War, people are imagining what freedom will look like for the black community.
I want to just take a quick pause, let folks know that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye, our weekly talk show. My guest this week is author and educator Anna Mae Duane, and she's the author of the new book, Educated for Freedom, highlighting two gentlemen. And as I always say, I consider myself a history buff, but two gentlemen in particular, James McCune Smith and Henry Highland Garnett, two African-Americans who played a formidable role in civil rights in this country. But up until now, Anna Mae, I guess it's fair to say they didn't get their due. Two guys that achieve an astounding, especially for that period in American history, level of education. It sounds like they had a pretty profound impact, at least on African American culture and advocating on behalf of rights for African Americans in this country. Is there a reason why their names, as you said, the Harriet Tubmans, the Frederick Douglass, most people, whether you're a history person or not, have said, yeah, I've heard of that person, but these two guys have not surfaced until now. Was that done intentionally, or just they just happened to fall through the cracks?
I don't know if it was done intentionally. I think it's we have certain stories that we are attached to in American history, and I think the story that we think about when we think about African Americans before the Civil War is one of suffering and struggle, and freedom is something that's either given or fought for, or that you run towards. And so I think that their stories don't fit in how we imagine the Civil War happens, and sort of who gets to give freedom and what the community is doing. So I think in some ways we just don't know what to do with their stories.
Yeah.
And I also think they're kind of, Henry Highland Garnett, at least, is sort of a controversial figure. He changes his mind about what the right thing to do for African Americans is, and I think that caused some controversy in his time, which also made his story a little harder to grab onto, because it's not sort of this neat trajectory from slavery to freedom.
As you said, many activists of that period, the Harriet Tubmans and the Frederick Douglasses and the Nat Turners, spoke, boldly about equal rights. And I want to say in a general sense, and I'm not trying to minimize their contributions. I get the sense from reading your book and the fact that these two gentlemen, James McCune Smith and Henry Highland Garnett, had achieved a level of education that most African Americans, especially at that period in American history, never did, that these two guys focused on the fact that if African Americans at that time, and certainly for future generations, wanted to better themselves, and education was certainly a way of going about that. Is that true?
Absolutely, but I think it was a complicated question for them throughout their lives. For one thing, this remarkable school that they attended, gave contradictory messages, and I think for them, what education could mean was something they had to figure out on their own. So for the school, which was an excellent school, they received an education better than many white children in New York City at the time. But even they had a white schoolmaster who, by all accounts, really believed in them, but also in some ways didn't believe that prejudice would be dispelled in the United States. So by the time they're ready to graduate, the school is sort of split over this question of, okay, we have these educated kids, but will the country embrace them? Will the country let them use their potential? There was, in the school records, I found this remarkable speech. It's a valedictorian, another student, not one of my two guys, giving a speech as a valedictorian, which is, in this elite school, he's the top student. And the first part of the speech is about, the usual. I'm, so proud, and everyone can see that we're equal. And the second half is about how it doesn't matter because no one will give him a job.
Yeah.
So there's sort of this impasse. And at the schoolmaster, and this is part of a larger conversation that's going on at the time, starts telling the students, well, their best option is to leave the United States. And colonize Liberia in Africa. It's part of a big conversation around the African Colonization Society, which is this argument that we can't imagine a country in which everyone's equal, even if by all accounts everyone is equal, prejudice will remain. We can't get rid of it. And what happens at that school, just as they're graduating, like a year or two after they graduate, the mothers and fathers of this community refuse to send their children to this school anymore because they refuse that lesson. They are not on board with anyone telling their students that there was no future for them in this country. So even as their education shaped them and was really important for them, they had to also sort of carve out their own lessons. And I think the lessons they learned from the mothers in the community were just as important as the lessons they learned in the schoolhouse.
It's funny, what you just said resonates to this very day. You've got young children, you want them to have every opportunity under the sun, but at the same token, I think deep down inside, even though we say, I want them to spread their wings and go about their business and find their way in life, many of us want to believe that they'll come back, after finishing education and getting settled in a career, that they stay kind of close by at home. So it certainly makes sense. Were these two gentlemen highly regarded among African Americans of that time?
Oh, yes. It's interesting. So in terms of their education, they both take two very different paths. And James McCune Smith, who's sort of the star student in all the records, right? As an 11-year-old boy, he gets to give the address to the Marquis de Lafayette, who had come back for a victory tour. He is held in such high esteem, both by white benefactors and the black community, that they take up a collection and sent him to Scotland to get his MD because no school would admit him in the U.S., right? Back to that problem of, okay, you're educated. Is the country going to let you use it? And when he returns after, graduating with honors from the University of Glasgow with an MD, they have a huge celebration in the streets with, the current principals of the school, his schoolmates. They put an ad in the paper. They write an article in the paper. And they claim him, he's our public property, they say. And I think, they're saying that this is, he's such an example, he's such a role model to the next generation that they, you know, they hold him up in the newspaper as someone we all need to emulate. He becomes good friends with, they both become really good friends with Frederick Douglass, though Henry Highland Garnett has a bit of a rivalry with Frederick Douglass, but they work on, so for instance, James McCune Smith works on Frederick Douglass on his second autobiography, so it helps him sort of shape and edit his own life story. So they're both sort of behind the scenes. We don't know their names, but when you start to scratch the surface, you see that they're in these bigger conversations.
Yeah. How did the average white citizen of that time, you get McCune Smith coming back, as you said, from Scotland with an MD, certainly achieved something that was unique at that time for an African-American. Was he respected, treated equally in terms of like peers? I mean, other MDs, other people who are whites who had achieved a similar level of education, or in spite of his high education, they still look down upon him?
Right, that's a great question, Al. And again, it sort of goes back to sort of how contradictory everything was in this country, right? This is the 1830s. No one knows what's going to happen. I mean, there's lots of people who think that slavery is going to go on forever. So what do we do with this highly educated man? And in some ways, one of the reasons why I chose to tell their two stories is because they tell two different stories of the possibilities for educated and successful African-American men at the time. So to answer your question, James McCune Smith gets invited to give talks at these halls of learning. He goes to Philadelphia and gives a talk. He publishes in medical journals. So in many ways, it's not across the board, but people do invite him into this conversation. Henry Highland Garnett, by all accounts, is just as powerful an intellect, on the other hand, has to fight for every ounce of education he gets and meets disrespect almost everywhere along the line. So to just give one example, while James McCune Smith is in Scotland earning his MD, Henry Highland Garnett is scrambling for any sort of secondary education. There's just nothing that will, there's no school that will take him or his classmates in. And I talk about this in the book. He has several points where he thinks he's got a place to land and it's just taken away from him. And to just give one example, he and some school friends are asked to attend a school in Canaan, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And he's doing very well there. They have to travel up. They have to travel on the outside of coaches because they're not allowed inside the coaches, and they have to sort of forage for their own meals because no inn will take them. But when they get to the school, they're doing quite well. They're writing poetry. They're, on their way. And then one day late in the summer, the townspeople literally get, and we have trouble imagining how this worked, but there's several newspaper accounts that attest to this, 90 oxen. And they hook the oxen up to the school building, and they drag it a mile into the swamp because they're so intimidated by the idea of an institution of higher education for African Americans. There's gunfire, and they basically run Henry Highland Garnett and his friends out of town, and he's back to square one. So you have, two different Americas, depending on where you happen to be. So, and sometimes you will receive respect, and other times you're running for your life for daring to be educated.
Yeah, that was very surprising to me, that episode you just mentioned, the destruction of the school and running these guys out of town, these African-American scholarly hopefuls, if you will, especially up here in New England. We people think, if there was any tolerance at all in this country at that period, pre-Civil War, during the Civil War, and even shortly thereafter, it would have been here in New England. But yet, as you point out, intolerance was, it ran everywhere, didn't it?
It really did. It really did. I know that's a story. When I teach my classes in Connecticut, I have to remind my students that, yes, we fought on the right side of the Civil War, but that doesn't mean it was by any account of, you know, sort of a civil rights paradise in the North. There were plenty of incidents like this. There was a school that they attempted to set up in New Haven, and the townspeople, you know, said, we won't let foreigners come into our state. They envisioned anyone who wasn't white as foreign. So, yeah, there was a lot to be worked out in the North and the South. And both of these men, I think, really pushed the envelope in lots of ways.
Now, that shows, as you said, that shows that side of, as you said, that side of intolerance that, you know, we didn't think was so prominent up here in New England. But let me ask you, was there much in the way, because of their higher education, because they were literate, because they could speak well, these two African-American early civil rights leaders, did they still have to fear bodily harm, death threats? Did they encompass much of that?
Absolutely. And this, again, is a moment later in the book, which, again, sort of speaks to this almost... I keep referring to it in the book as sort of like you think you're standing on solid ground and it's torn from under your feet. So this is towards the end of the book. We're getting close to the Civil War. At this point, Henry Highland Garnett has traveled abroad and he's back. He's helping to recruit soldiers for the effort. James McCune Smith has a thriving pharmacy and medical practice, and he's the head physician at what was called the Colored Orphan Asylum, which sounds Dickensian and bleak, but it was actually this incredible building on Fifth Avenue that was a school for African-American children, and it had hot and cold running water and a swimming pool.
Wow.
It was sort of this incredible institution that he had overseen.
Yeah.
And it seems as if, you know, they're going to see all their hard work is paying off, right? The slavery is going to be abolished. The country has finally stood up for African-American freedom. And one hot day in 1863, New York City starts the draft, right? They are realizing they need to draft people for the war effort, and the way it was working out. At that time, if you were wealthy, you could buy your way out. So it was going to end in New York. The governor would not allow black soldiers to fight. If you wanted to fight, you had to join the Massachusetts regiment. And so one hot day when they start calling draft numbers, there is a, they call it the draft riots, but it's really just a massacre of white people throughout the city. They burn down the Colored Orphan Asylum.
Wow.
They come to Henry Highland Garnett's house. He escapes only because they didn't quite know which house was his.
Right.
And hundreds, dozens certainly, and almost certainly hundreds of black men, women, and children are killed in the streets of New York City.
See, again, one of those episodes in U.S. history that kind of goes, no light has been shed on things like that, unless you, as you, in your case, did this kind of research. Did things get any better after the Civil War? You know, once it was known that, hey, look, you know, the war is over, whether you like it or not, you know, slavery and everything that you've, you've come to know up to this point, certainly slowly, but things were going to change. Did that make it any easier for these two men to have an impact?
Right, and that is sort of the subject of Henry Highland Garnett's speech. So he's sort of asked to be the person who tells the country like what is going to happen next at the 13th Amendment, right? That now we're abolishing slavery legally, the war is coming to an end. Tell us, you know, what do you think? Where do we go from here?
Right.
And that speech is really interesting, and I think very timely in lots of ways, thinking of even our own moment in which, you know, maybe they thought he was going to give a speech where he was just going to be really thankful and thinking, okay, well, now we're all done and we can just move on. But he was, you know, partially because of what he had experienced, he warns the country that there's more work to do.
Yeah.
That freedom doesn't just mean you abolish slavery. Freedom means that we need to work to address these debts that have been incurred. That we need to, you know, he talks about the badges of slavery, which is understood as prejudice, is understood as sort of unfair treatment. So I think that's something that scholars are still, and civil rights activists are still wrestling with today. Like, you know, what are the legacies of this era? It was sort of an ambivalent speech, but in many ways, I think Henry Helen Garnett reinvests in the United States. Before the Civil War, he had sort of agreed with the idea, and this was caused some problems with his friends, including James McCune Smith and Frederick Douglass. He had sort of come around to the idea, like, you know what, maybe we should leave. And he started an organization to resettle people who wanted to go to Liberia. But after the Civil War, he takes that organization and goes down south, the south of the United States, to educate the children of slaves there. So he sort of returns to his own education. James McCune Smith, sadly, he was suffering from ill health, and I honestly think, personally, that the draft riots and the attack of the orphan asylum breaks his heart.
Yeah.
He dies in 1865,
right.
And but one of the last things he does is write the introduction to Henry Highland Garnett's speech to Congress. Yeah. And to me, that's such an important moment, yeah, because these two men had been friends all their lives. They had disagreed on many points, and here they come back together to sort of survey all the work they had done. Yeah. And I think one of the things I hope people get from this book is that we don't think about how the efforts of men like them and communities like them actually contributed to getting to the 13th Amendment and Civil War. Many white abolitionists were totally fine with the idea of sending everyone to Liberia, and it was the black community, like the mothers at the school,
yeah,
that said that is not the freedom we imagined.
Right.
That's not the road we're going to go down. And they reshaped that conversation.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's dictating to them how you're going to live your life. You're going to move, as you said, to Liberia and make a new life there, and not do it here in the United States. And that was, running contrary to what they believed in. The other thing, in the final few moments that we have, that comes to mind as I'm listening to you this evening talk about these two men, is that they were also realists and visionaries, knowing that, okay, the war is over. Guess what? You're now free. You can start businesses. You can attain any level of education. That certainly was not the case. In fact, I hate to say it, but here we are in 2020, and I think many, many groups, African Americans among certainly primary in that, are still fighting for some of the things that we all take for granted. But amazingly, that they had, as I keep saying, that they had fallen through the crack, especially after attaining the education level that they did, doing so much that they did, especially for the African American community. But hopefully, as you said, Educated for Freedom, the new book, will bring to light and at least shed some light and give credit and credence to these two gentlemen. Anime, if people want to get more information about you personally, the book, and highlighting James McCune Smith and Henry Highland Garnett, how can they do that?
I encourage anyone, if they had any questions or reactions, to hit me up on Twitter, and my handle is my name, and that's AnnaMaeDuane, and I also have a website of that same name, AnimeDuane.com. So either of those places, there's more about the book on the website, but I'd love to have a conversation with anyone on Twitter who's interested.
Great. And just Googling Anna May's name, you'll find she is on the faculty associate professor of English at the University of Connecticut, right here in New England. And as she said, she's leaving herself wide open to hearing from listeners, especially about the topic at hand this evening. The two gentlemen, James McCune Smith and Henry Highland Garnett. The book is Educated for Freedom. My guest has been Anna May Duane. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. Certainly urge people to send comments, questions to me directly as well. I certainly welcome that. Your feedback is always very important to us. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.